All right, so we are launching into, continuing on with our study through the, or I'll say recap of the Mastering the Scripture series. We're still in the early letters. We are now moving into Romans, and conversation there around Paul's treatise in to the Romans that you know, certainly lays a stage for both a full treatise of the gospel and establishing ourselves in our churches. So we will kick things off and I guess dive in. I've seen studies on this go for weeks and weeks and even into years. I remember one of the earliest studies I ever saw done on Romans, where someone was going through you know, week by week. They were at something on the order of week 60 of their Roman study. I mean, and it's, you know, not to say they were moving slow. There really is a lot in Romans. I mean, they were probably moving slower than they needed to move. But it's a book that's packed with a lot of ideas and a lot of things that that we use, whether they're in the first principles or other sections of our materials. So you know, mastering it is certainly a key item in our establishment.
You know, it's interesting you would bring that up, because it's not uncommon for, in a traditional form of expository teaching, to preach a year or a year and a half in Romans. But one of the problems is, if you remember me talking about Paul being an integrated thinker, he's not a Western systematic theologian thinker, but he's thinking holistically and keeps cycling around. There's a core center that he just keeps cycling around. So you walk away with some real clear, powerful ideas about the gospel and a fairly clear picture of the gospel. What I call in Romans the complete treatise of the gospel. But the problem is, when you go at it in all that kind of detail, and if you're looking at Paul as a systematic theologian, like a modern day systematic theology professor, for example, you can spend 2 or 3 weeks on one small paragraph debating the meaning of words of justification or whatever down through the Reformation. And when you're done, you can't see the forest for the trees, and you wind up without clear thinking. And you're going to see that this morning, because the objective, I'm going to spend 2 weeks, again, there were just too many slides. There were 70 some between the, you know, just on the Romans summary. And so we're going to spend 2 weeks instead of one. But the whole objective is that you can think through Romans like that. And I'm going to give you kind of a unique project to do at the end of the time today. But a big part of the time that Michael's done, that the last couple introductions, is he's talked about his process, you know, his development process. Julie, you mentioned to me afterwards how valuable that was to see not only his process, but then the interchange that we had of author's intent, literary design, biblical theology, and so part of our objective here, as we're ramping up to continue the rest of the books, the rest of the middle books and later books, is that you develop some real competency in interpreting accurately the scripture, because you can get yourself on top of Paul's early, middle, and later letters in a very significant way. But since Michael was describing his process, why don't we've got back into this series. We're 5-6 weeks into getting ourselves tuned up. It's kind of like going to rehab in the minors and then getting to the majors when we pick the books up again. But what's your experience been, Todd, as we've been going through this? You've heard Michael's, how he's aggressively going at it. How have you been challenged afresh by us getting back into it?
Yeah, so here in you know, this time around, you know, the thing that has really, I think, been the challenge is, you know, when in the introductory session, you talked about Paul's way of thinking as integrated ideas, not systematic. in the sense that he's circling around, these core ideas. There's details and ways that he fleshes those out, but they're all coming back to core ideas throughout the letters, and trying to understand both the details and then getting them back to the big picture. This time around has, I think, been an extra challenge, and that's always, been in part of the part of the way that I've looked at the letters and understood them. And as I'd say, the earliest example of that would be as you're going through the first principles. You oftentimes, especially if you're leading a first principles class, you'll have to apologize to people because you're you're going to hear this material again and again and again and again and again. Whether it's right after the class and some time you're leading or someone else is leading at church on Sunday night, you're going to hear those ideas just everywhere around you, and you're not going to be able to escape them. And so that's earliest times I can think of. That was there, but now as I come back into this study, thinking through what was it Paul was really driving at, what were the big ideas, and it's interesting, the kind of took me back. So my grandma's funeral occurred this year, and at that funeral, the person presiding over that ceremony was there, and they were not there also. As we were getting into it, I was just observing. Most of the time, the pastor at a church is there, and they're just going around shaking everyone's hand, just being around and about all of the event, because that's their job as the employee, right? And and this time, I hardly saw her. It was like she was purposefully just isolating in an office, and I even got to the point where I wasn't quite sure that we weren't just going to see a video, that she had shot at some point before, in 1990 or 2000 or some time in the past. I don't know why I would have expected that, but that's kind of the direction I was halfway expecting things to go. But she really, delivered, I thought, some good messages that, I've actually come back to as we've been looking through this. And, she really pointed, to a verse in John chapter 1, verse 17. I bring this up not because it's one of Paul's letters, but because these ideas, as I've been going back through, I've been integrating them back, the work that Paul did was the work that Christ did. It's not the separated objective that Paul was doing his own thing, or John was doing his own thing, and Peter his own thing. It was all the same work. It was Christ's work. And so in John 1:17, Jesus, or John says, Jesus doesn't say this, John says, for the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. And as I was reviewing even this time for Romans, oh my gosh, Romans brings grace and truth through to the forefront so many times in so many ways, but it is circling around that the entirety of the book. Mm-hmm. You can't just focus on the grace that is being displayed in the big picture that God is unfolding, but you also can't just focus on the truth. If you only focus on one or the other, you end up in the same place. You end up in a very systematic study, where you can get this impression of a God that really doesn't feel for you, or if you're looking just at the grace side, you end up with my favorite visualization of that Steve Kemp presented once of Buddy Jesus. The Buddy Jesus is doing this and pointing fingers at you, but there's not really a display of that in his ministry, and Paul is continuing that work. He is unfolding that in a lot of detail here in Romans, and as I've been going back through, I was just amazed at how that was the circling that was going on, and the fact that as we've talked over the years about there not being a separation, we're talking about the DWCA, the work of Christ and His apostles, tying that together, to me was, and I've talked about this a little in church and in cluster gatherings, but to me that's starting to help put together, giving me confidence in the ideas, but helping to understand how I can help bring that to other people, because that is a huge. A huge idea, a huge integration, and that's how Paul was thinking. But practically speaking, it's still tough to lead people down that road of the work that Paul was doing is the work that Jesus is doing. So that's one example of some of how
I've
seen that.
That's interesting that you would choose that verse, because that's a simple concept. The law coming through Moses and with Jesus' grace and truth, for a core. Because Romans is a very difficult argument. I mean, it's all one argument through these early letters, but it's very difficult. I mean, he has one sustained argument from starting in 1:16 and going all the way through 15:33. So that's a long time to hold one argument, with four major movements, in that argument. We're going to work on that next week, give you a project this week to try to enable you to get to that point yourself. But you've taken a number of our larger build courses. You've taken, if I remember right, you've been on some of the Series 2,
yep,
where you're doing biblical theology, doing author's intent, literary design, biblical theology of the books. You've taken some of those, right?
Yep.
Do you have a sense because that's a different level of work. This is a level of work that comes out much more in tool form with people, but adding that work together with what you're learning by going back through Mastering the Scriptures, do you have, and I think you do, but maybe give us a sense of that, of building your own body of work, because you're one of the key next-gen leaders. And it's important that you've got a growing body of work to be able to, at the level of a growing mastery of the Scripture.
Yep.
But talk a little bit about your own sense of developing your own body of work.
Yeah. So throughout that process, there's definitely different levels, to go at things, and you whether it's the Series 2 courses or these Mastering the Scriptures. It seems like you can only move so far, so fast. So getting into the author's intent, getting the literary designs, a lot of the work I've done has been those two things, and there's been theology on the other side of that, but it's not as developed, I would say. And that's really where to me, the next phase of a lot of the work is continuing to build out, then the theology and implications, and you get into a continual cycle then of,
yep,
redeveloping those as circumstances change, new problems arise. You could say they're old problems. There's not a new problem under the sun, right? But there's just new ways to apply that those principles and those ideas, and so that's. That's where a lot of my focus continues. And there's certainly refinement of the intention statements and literary designs, and that goes on. But to me, the next phase, and I would always tell people too, you have different phases you're going through. Whether you're just reading Romans, that's a great start. Getting something written down for an intention statement's a good start, a good next step. And having a solid intention statement is certainly something that would be a great milestone to hit. And then doing the literary designs and beginning to do break out the theological themes that you're seeing, but yeah, for a lot of this work is driving back towards the need to develop that theology.
That's a great description. In fact, that's because majority of you've done things like Mastering the Scriptures, but you haven't done our heavier courses, like our Old New Testament theology courses. And that's exactly how they're designed. You can't go through one of the Old or New Testament. There's 10 courses, 4 Old Testament, 4 New Testament, in terms of the whole canonical sections of the Old and New Testament. But the courses take 3 times through, or the process takes 3 times through. They don't necessarily do the course, but the first time through, all you can really do is get a hold of the author's intent, you know, and the second time through, you can begin to sharpen that, do some literary design, and just initially start your Old New Testament theology. And then the third cycle through the same courses, then you're in a position where you can say, wow, I can start putting some substantive stuff together. And if you're using the first Mastering the Scriptures as a tool, then every cycle strengthens your ability, you know, to be able to lead. So what you described as a sense of where you're at in that process, you know, you're entering into what would be, if we were really being strategic, you're entering into what we would call years 8 to 12, because it takes 4 years to, you know, to cycle through the Old and New Testament, you know, with those courses. And for me personally, this has taken these 6 weeks. I just got a sense last night, because we got 2 or 3 of them in prototype form, physically, the books. But when I finished Romans and cleaned up some things and learned some additional things, I just had a feeling, wow, that's the feeling I had at the end of the Gospels when I was just putting those 5 books together. We're on top of that. You know, this is ready, you know, for it. So in one sense, the first part of this, just like the Gospels took 10 years, it's taken 10 years to get Paul's early, middle, later letters in that level of format. And so some of you are just beginning that process, and I'll give you a challenge towards that direction this morning.
Yeah, it's really, you know, I would say too, is you've challenged us in the past, you know, get some things down in the theology, but you know, ultimately a lot of that work that we're striving to do, we want it to be relatable to other people. We want it to be practical. It's not just a matter of having jargon written down. It's relatable things you can actually use and implement, and you know, these artifacts like the Mastering the Scriptures series are a great example of that. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be the lengths that all of us go to in you know, presenting theology to other people, but I mean the level of work and you know, trying to relate it to other people is really, and ourselves. It is really what we're going for. Like you're saying, we're trying to own this stuff, you know. And in, you know, my generation, your generation, generations coming after me, you know, it can't just be jargon that we're owning. Well, we have to understand what's behind it.
One of the ideas there is that mastering the Scriptures, all Scripture is inspired by the Spirit and profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction and righteousness. In other words, the more we've can grab a hold of it ourselves, put in our own words, build our own body of work, the more effective we are in being able to draw on all of Scripture for doctrine, for reproof, for training in righteousness, for really helping people develop. Okay, we're going to go at this. It's I divided it in 2, so I won't dare say it's a little shorter, because every time I say that, it seems like it's a curse.
It's going to be less than a year and a half, though, right? So, I mean, we're going to get a year and a half worth of stuff in 2 weeks. Just put it that way.
Yeah. But also, I'm going to be squinting again. 3 weeks ago, this Tuesday, I had cataract surgery. And I got that multifocal, but my eye's still not clear. In fact, it might be a little bit worse. They've checked everything out. There's no problems. It's just healing slowly is what they're saying. But Tuesday, I got to decide whether to have the other eye this Tuesday, because everything's set up for it. And those of you that have had this, you know that you're balance is always off because your eyes don't line up till you get that second one in. So I don't want to be in that permanently, but if it operates on the other eye and I can't see it that as poorly as this one, what am I going to need, a cane? Maybe I'll borrow Keith's chair or something like that so I can... Yeah. Don't mess with Keith. It is kind of a concern, though. What would you do? What would you do? Would you go for the other eye?
Oh, it depends on what they. If the doctors could say, yeah, we this is normal recovery, yeah, then I'd feel more confident.
He's one of the best in the world, and the only advice he could give me was, it's a 50-50 choice.
Ooh, boy.
So.
And I work on redundant systems at work, and I can tell you the redundancy doesn't work as well if one's already down.
Thinking like an engineer. Okay. There's a couple really fresh sections in here and set you up for the project I want to give you. But I'm going to take my time in the review because... The whole argument for how these books fit together is in Romans, and I already kind of laid that foundation, but it's going to make more sense now, and then added some additional things into it, and then after we've got it all framed solidly, then next week we're going to take his argument of 1:15 through 15:33. In four major movements and sections, but you'll see them all in one form. And I'm going to challenge you to go after those four sections and read it a couple times. Take one section, read it a couple times the same day. Second day, try to put the main argument in one paragraph. So you've got your own four paragraphs on the other side of it. So I'll show you, and I'll show you how to do that. But I did something a little bit different at the beginning here. You remember that at the beginning of a session in the Mastering the Scriptures, or in all of them, First Principles 2, you start off with reflection on what's the author's intention? What's he trying to do in this book? What's he trying to do in this passage? And then you put the passage in your own words. We give you some readings. Then you have a discussion together, and then but before that Socratic discussion, there's another issue, and that issue it causes you to say, okay, let's discuss the implications of this, so you'll be able to work on your own projects, you know, in the last session. It's always the same process. So I put both of them up here. This shouldn't say fully established. The first issue is, what was Paul's intent in Romans? So what was Paul's intent in writing this letter to the Roman churches? What does it mean for the Romans to be fully established in the gospel? How could he call the gospel his gospel? How did he receive this full understanding of the gospel? That he's so confident that it's full or that it's the complete gospel and they've never got it this complete like this before. How does his argument unfold in Romans 1:16 to 15, I should say 33, I believe. I'm not sure which it is, but you'll see it later. What are the main points included in this full understanding of the gospel? And again, that relates to what Todd was sharing. What are the main points? You can't go after, you got a big section. You can't go after the smaller paragraphs, the individual verses, if you can't state the whole thing, if you don't know what that section means. Otherwise you'll be off in one of the secondary traditions that you grew up in and what the Presbyterians said or what the Methodists said about a given verse. Why was Paul passionate to see the Romans get this full understanding? What was on the line in his ministry strategy and his network-wide strategy? So Paul's after more than just getting these ideas right. This has huge implications that they understand the full gospel has complete gospel has implications for his strategy. And he's clear about that and spending so much time in Romans 16 on the strategy and how the Romans will affect that and why they need to be solid. But remember, the second thing we have to ask if we get our hands accurately around the book is, what does it mean to be fully established in the gospel? These are implications for us. What are some of the specific tests to measure whether a person is fully established in the gospel? How does your worldview fundamentally change if you fully grasp the gospel as presented by Paul in Romans? Because he's changing the whole narrative. You remember that on the road to Emmaus, Jesus basically unfolded to those two disciples who were walking with him. You got the whole wrong narrative of the story. You got the story all wrong. And so he straightened out the narrative. Paul is also straightening out the whole narrative of the story and understanding the gospel accurately within that narrative. And it actually gives you a framework for remembering a lot of the key ideas. And in what way is the gospel fundamental to the unity of churches being of one mind? Now remember, this is six books are being produced. I'm surveying book one, Paul's early letters. So we look at Galatians, we look at the Thessalonian correspondence, the two Corinthian letters individually, and now Romans. The specific section that we're on right now, the last one, is the Roman treatise. So we went after the Galatian problem, the uniqueness of the Thessalonians' conversion, and how to continue that process, all the schisms, conflicts without fears within that you face that are cleaned up by the gospel, and then this great treatise of it. And remember, this these letters are a 10-year conversation. In other words, it's taken Paul. He's been battling getting this gospel clear for 10 years. We know this because it appears that the battle really began around the first missionary journey, 47 AD, until the writing of Romans. Paul's first confrontation with Peter was in 47. So actually, you could say the gospel, Paul was wrestling with it in Arabia for 3 years to really get it clear. Even on the first missionary journey, he's proclaiming the gospel and they're fighting him every place that those initial churches are started. So it's longer than the 10-year period. But in 47 was his first confrontation with Peter in Galatians 2, 1 to 10. Then you have Peter in Antioch in 49 AD, and then the Jerusalem Council following that. The early letters of Paul, autumn of 49 to Romans in 56, the real confrontation starts in 47. So you're really dealing with a decade to win that argument, which he accomplished with his Romans manifesto to the gospel. So again, it's like we can see it in real life action. We can see, it's like you take the gospel and you turn it so you can see it. You can see it different ways, but in Galatians. Galatians is kind of a mini Romans, more than the other books. In fact, you know all the heavy lifting work that N.T. Wright has done in his body of work. Most of his work is Romans and Galatians, trying to get that straightened out. So it took Paul a solid decade, and now on to his rather compact, full unveiling of the church. And you'll see, if you do your work in Romans this week, that there are very few churches today in the U.S. that have a full grasp of that gospel, a complete grasp of it. Very, very few, you would say, are established, you know, in that. In that gospel. And again, I think once we get these all published out, you'll have a systematic way of developing your own understanding in an increasing way, but working in developing others. Romans is key to understanding the entire collection. And I could have pulled this section out and put it down below because I just have a handful of slides and doing some additional framing of Romans, setting up for next week. But I decided to leave it here because Romans frames everything in these letters, but it also is more logical to keep the argument straight. And so kind of what I'm doing is now that we're doing these two sessions on Romans, we've been putting the puzzle together. It's like when you're putting a puzzle together, you know, and you got this corner set up and you got this section, but as you keep building it, pretty soon the momentum picks up because you can see the whole picture and you don't have that many pieces left. Well, that's what happens if you logically follow through Paul's conversation after conversation on getting a clear understanding of the gospel. Romans is key to understanding it. The early letters Paul's early letters to his network of churches. Several preliminary comments on the context of Romans in the early letters. It's the final and largest letter. It is less occasional than the others, more of a manifesto. It's bookended by sections that tell you it is a more complete treatment of the gospel. When you go to 1 through 16, he basically says, I'm proclaiming to you a complete gospel. When you get to 16, 25 to 27, he said, now I've proclaimed to you the complete gospel, which is my gospel, which is the gospel of Jesus Christ. So you know that's what he's doing because he tells you what he's going to tell you. Then he gives you the complete gospel. Then he tells you what he told you. Its context is establishing the churches in the gospel, which was the front line of the battle. Now back to this verse again. He finishes, now to him who is able to strengthen you, that's the word established that Paul uses again and again and again all through his letters, establish you according to my gospel, the proclamation of Jesus Christ. Actually, in the Greek, it's juxtapositioned. So it's really saying, strengthen you according to my gospel, which is the gospel of Jesus Christ. So he's putting those two beside each other and saying they're identical. Let's see, in accordance with the unveiling of the mystery kept hidden for long ages, but now revealed and made known through the prophetic writings, according to the command of the eternal God for the obedience of faith among all the Gentiles, to the only wise God through Christ Jesus, through Jesus the Messiah, to whom be the glory to the coming ages. Amen. So Paul wants to add to their understanding of the gospel by bringing them a complete proclamation, which will secure, clarify, and build a comprehensive defense for the gospel for them, thus establishing them completely. And notice that in that verse, he uses establish again. It's central to Paul's occasional purpose of writing letters, all the letters. This can be quickly seen in three ways. It's central to his purpose of his second missionary journey. Remember when he says, let's go back and visit the churches, let's go back and strengthen the churches, see how they are with a view of strengthening them. And then he says in 16:5, after visiting them, now they're established. Then he sent Timothy to Thessalonica with his first letter to establish the Thessalonians. And now he summarizes the Romans letter as having established them in the gospel, to rooted, to be stable, to be solid. I'm not going to take the time, actually. Yeah. Now let's do a quick glance. In book one, the Galatian problem, in Galatians, remember, they left the gospel for another. Here Paul makes the case by confronting Peter, who actually formed the kerygma formulae. In other words, Peter had the core gospel. He just didn't have a complete understanding. That's why the conflicts with Peter. That's what Paul is trying to straighten out here by giving this very careful argument, four movements of that argument, in chapter 1 through 15. He roots the gospel in the Old Testament law, showing how it all fits in the original plan of God. And the context here is, why are you so quickly deserting it? Then we went to Thessalonians, and the Thessalonian letters, building on their solid conversion of this gospel, he challenges them to become fully established in it. In other words, they got a great start. A couple things have destabilized them, and now he wants to make sure that their conversion process is solid and stable, which again means they can't be confused on the gospel itself. Then in the Corinthian schisms in session 4, in Corinthian correspondence, Paul relates the gospel to all of the divisions in the Corinthian church, defending the gospel as the same one preached by all the apostolic leaders. It is affirmed by that statement again in 15:1-6, same as Peter's basic thing. That's what he did get from the apostles, but he didn't get the full understanding. And 2 Corinthians opening the understanding of the new covenant ministry. And now in Romans, he does a complete treatise of the gospel to the Romans, introducing the letters with kerygmatic statement to firmly establish the churches in that gospel, thus fully convincing those who may be confused and providing a complete gospel. So again, first of all, we got to understand it. And then second, we got to say, what are the implications? And I'm convinced that when you put these together and then think through churches, think through your own lives, think through your own individual church and our network of churches, but as we think through churches at large, you can have a very solid assessment of whether churches are established or not established and what pieces they have confused. I remember Randy Kennedy from when he went through book one, because he was with Crusade about a third of his whole ministry, in business first and now with McCullen. When he and one of the key elders in the church that he's in started going through the first principles, they were shocked going through session one on that basic thing of the message, you know, where it's the essence of that for me. He says, because we only got two of the five right in our explanation of how we give the gospel. So you can measure things, whether it's small like that or whether it's all the different kinds of problems that are being faced in a church, because you can see all the different problems and how Paul applied the gospel to them. Now let's turn a little more directly to Romans, although we've been in Romans, it shapes this whole framework. Probably Paul's greatest letter in which the whole theology of the gospel unfolds. This was probably what he was thinking through in the 3 years in the wilderness. The whole framework has to be rethought. And that's one of the other contributions of N.T. Wright, is thinking through, especially when you go through his two massive volumes. You remember we spent time in them when they came out in about 2014. What he's doing there is he's saying, yes, you got to understand Romans and Galatians, but if you understand Romans and Galatians right, it redoes the narrative. It reshapes the narrative, you know, as a whole. And so that's what Paul's doing in those four sections is rethinking the narrative, reframing how you should think about the Jewish people in the narrative, Romans 9 through 11, you know, for example. So the whole narrative has to be rethought. And so that's what he was doing in the wilderness. Again, the last three verses of Romans gives us the picture of what he was trying to accomplish. I'm not going to read that again. But we still have to ask a little more clearly, how in the world can Paul call this his gospel? Why is it his and not Peter's or other Jewish leaders of the church around Peter? Well, Galatians 1, 11 to 18 really answers this question. You see, brothers and sisters, let me make it clear to you. The gospel announced by me is not a mere human invention. I didn't receive it from human beings, nor was I taught it. It came through an unveiling of Jesus the Messiah. You heard, didn't you, the way I behaved when I was still within Judaism. That's such an interesting phrase. That how I behaved when I was still within Judaism. He isn't within Judaism in this way anymore, but he's still operating out of his Jewish inheritance and rethinking the narrative and, you know, and putting it together. Well translated. I persecuted the church of God violently and ravaged it. I was advanced in Judaism beyond many of my own age and beyond people. So in other words, he really had mastered the whole Judaizing system. He'd mastered that, which is probably why it took him 3 years to rethink things, you know, in Arabia, because it's like it's scrambling everything. Everything goes back to zero if you use that paradigm shift idea. I was extremely zealous for my ancestral traditions, but when God, who set me apart from my mother's womb and called me by his grace, was pleased to unveil his son to me, in me, so that I might announce the good news about him among the nations, immediately I did not confer with flesh and blood, nor did I go up to Jerusalem to those who were apostles before me. No, I went away to Arabia and afterwards returned to Damascus. Then after 3 years, I went up to Jerusalem to speak with Cephas. I stayed with him for 2 weeks. Man, can you imagine that? He's rethinking everything. 3 years in that process. And the disciples on the road to Emmaus had the wrong narrative. And Peter was the steward of the gospel, had the keys when to affirm that the gospel was opened up to the Jews and then to the Samaritans and then ultimately at Cornelius' house to the Gentiles. So he had that core. But he didn't restructure the narrative completely. He could prove from the Old Testament how everything pointed to Christ, but he couldn't redo the narrative, which is what Paul is doing in Romans. But wouldn't you love to be in that conversation? Then, after 3 years, I went up to Jerusalem to speak with Cephas. I stayed with him for 2 weeks. I think it's interesting that he gives that kind of specific. Wouldn't you like to have a recording of the conversations of those 2 weeks, staying together during this period of time, knowing all the tumult that is taking place? The paradigm had such a firm grasp on the Jerusalem church that only persecution got the gospel spreading. And then actually the churches themselves and sometimes even the top leaders opposed some of that expansion. And man, I'd love to know what was said during those 2 weeks. What is Paul's point in telling his story of going away 3 years? What was he doing? Well, he was rethinking everything. It took him 3 years, and what came out of it? His gospel, not Peter's, not the other Jewish leaders in Jerusalem. Where did he get it? The whole picture was revealed to him by Jesus. He did not receive it through a human being. He was not taught it. And this even take on more significance when we get into Ephesians and we understand that Paul was given a twofold job description: to proclaim the gospel to the Gentiles, but to bring to light what is the mystery. Now, besides fully understanding this Christ unfolding, now it becomes clear that there's a huge amount of revelation that was just in nugget form when Jesus said, "I will build my church." And Paul's the one that Christ revealed this through. Again, it comes back, Todd, to your observation at the beginning. There's no distinction between this is Christ and this is Paul. You know, I mean, Paul was proclaiming, he had the mind of Christ, and part of it was imparted at this time. What does Paul mean when he says to the Romans, "I have proclaimed to you my gospel according to Jesus Christ"? God unveiled the whole picture to him through Jesus Christ, 3 years in Arabia. And Peter and those in Jerusalem could not rethink the whole story. So what did he really rethink? Well, he had to rethink the law. Very interesting, Todd, that you made the observations at the beginning. You know, the law came through Moses, but grace and truth through Jesus Christ. And all the stuff that Paul does on the law, I mean, he had to rethink that. He had to rethink Israel. That's what's part of Romans 9 through 11. God's hidden plan. He had to see the emergence of it through the gospel and the fullness of it through the revelation of Christ's plan of the church. He had to rethink the current times. He had to rethink the future of Israel. He rethought the whole story and reframed the entire law, the prophets, and the writing in light of the gospel, the good news. It came through an unveiling, it says in the Galatians passage. It took him 3 years. Evidently, he became progressively clear as he rethought his entire Jewish training, and he was at the top, as he rethought the entire law, the prophets, and the writings. No one else could see it clearly. Imagine that. No one else, as this church was unfolding, and the Spirit's directing it, and we see it unfold in Acts, no one else had the full narrative accurately at that point. That's why we're given these letters into the canon and into the New Testament. And it's not because, it's just the gifts and the choice of Paul and the gifts that God gave him. Because in those 3 years, he unveiled it. There was a growing understanding. I imagine he just spent lots of days where he was totally frustrated in not understanding a section or how it all fit together. Because if you're steeped in that paradigm and you're at the top of it and you're willing to kill people over it to stop this from unfolding, think what it means to rethink that. And it was a process with Paul, too. Very important, because it's a process of cycling through these letters and getting clearer and clearer ourselves. And that's why we have to identify senior elders, like in Titus, that have a firm grasp of the teaching, can teach, and can refute those who contradict, because it's a minefield of problems and contradictions that can take place in confusing the gospel, if you think of all the battles, you know, in those letters. So what was his gospel? The complete picture of what was revealed to him in 3 years in Arabia is in Romans. The argument of his full gospel is 1:16 to 15:13, his longest sustained argument in his letters. So you take his letters and you have argument sections there, but this one goes forever, it seems like, when you're trying to hold all those ideas into your head. But again, if you try to look at them as a whole bunch of isolated ideas and try to systematize them, let alone if you start thinking about the battle of the Reformation and all the different individual terms, you know, you're just lost. So that's why you have to get the big picture of the argument. And so if you look at the structure of it, 1:1 to 16 is one wave of the argument. 6:1 to 8:39 is another. 9:1 to 11:36, and then 12:1 to 15:13. Now, next week, I'm going to string the verses together so that you can think it through and then condense it into one paragraph. Now, a really key part of understanding this argument is he's going to finish the argument in more of a practical way, kind of a first run at the Didache in 12, 13, 14, 15. But prior to that, you have his first three waves of the argument where he's completely redoing the narrative. And that's where people can get lost. So he tells you the intent, the benefit of this, getting a hold of this narrative in 1:16 to 11:30. So after the first three phases of the argument, he says, "So my dear family, this is my appeal to you. By the mercies of God, offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. Worship like this brings your mind in line with God's." So what he's doing is he's bringing, with this narrative, he's bringing the new Christian's mind, he's bringing the Jewish Christian's mind in line with God's. What's more, don't let yourselves be squeezed into the shape dictated by the present age. Instead, be transformed by the renewing of your mind so that you can work out what God's will is, what is good and acceptable and complete. So many things in this section. When he says work out what God's will is, he's talking about God's will for the churches in Rome. He's talking about us individually, working out God's will. But we can't work it out what God's really doing in our lives and really make the best choices if our thinking is not lined up with God's, if our individual life narrative is not lined up with his life narrative. This is really simple stuff in a way. And you've heard me talk about this before, but the idea in that phrase, in line with God's, what's more, don't let yourself be squeezed into the shape dictated by this world. Instead, be transformed by renewing your mind. Be transformed is passive. Renewing your mind is active. So we renew our mind, and we're passively being transformed by the Spirit. And the word there, the Greek word, is metamorphizo, metamorphosis. So we're being transformed. So as you struggle, think about this. As you take, if you do this project, and you take the four sections one at a time, read it through, mark it up the second time, do your own summary, and struggle over that, you're actively renewing your mind. And you are being transformed, whether you know it or not, by the Spirit, you know, in the context of that. What a beautiful picture. So he's given them not just so they got the right academic information and so they got the narrative right, but so they can line their lives up. They can understand the will of God, that which is good and acceptable and complete. As churches, as a network of churches, as leaders, as families, and as individuals. So Romans 12, 1 and 2 sets the whole argument in context that we must keep clear in our minds to set the intention of this whole gospel in 1:16 to 11:36. In other words, that's the toughest part. You got to see how the last part fits in, but it's kind of a precursor to a more complete didache. So it's, in a way, it's kind of like it's all the gospel, but in a way, it's like kerygma didache, but the gospel setting that platform for a full understanding in 12 through 15. So in light of God's mercy, by faith in the Messiah, we are now part of a new family. So what he's saying here in Romans 12, 1 and 2, make a solid commitment to this new life. Renew our minds, bring our minds in line with God's narrative, and allowing the Spirit to work out God's specific will in our lives. Now, Paul's argument seems to be into these four phases. It's pretty reliable. There's quite a bit of consensus on that. So this week, I encourage you to read one section a day, two times each. So take 1:16 to 5:21. It seems like a lot, but it's not that big. And read it through, and don't try to do anything other than get the flow. But the second time, read it through, and I've got a whole system, and this is just two parts of the system. But remember, we got to start with the author's intention. If we can't figure out what the author's intended to meaning, we can't figure out the implications, meaning that's in the text. So the second reading through, and probably don't mark up your Bibles this way. For some reason, I marked up all the Bibles I had in the first 10 years. Some of them I marked up from what I was memorizing. I put stuff in the Bible. But now I'm so much further along in my understanding, I look back and say, I can't use that Bible. It's nice to understand history, but I marked the whole thing up. But now, on your phone, you can go Bing and print out 1:15 or 1:16 to 15:13, whatever that division is. You can, and then go through and read it once, and then the second time through, go through and do two things. You're looking for what is his main point. And if you think you got the main point, you kind of get excited and you put two asterisks by it, all right? But then you use another tool that I call CC. So what is the core concept he's getting at? CC is corollary concepts. In other words, maybe there's three or four subpoints that he's making. Then put CC by that. And some of you think, that's the craziest thing I ever heard. Well, that's just the beginning of the system. It works. I've used it for years. It's kind of, all that's kind of an adaptation of Adler in a way. But go through and mark that. Then when you're done with that, in one paragraph, then condense his argument of the entire section into one paragraph. Nothing more, just one paragraph. And then you look at it, and you'll be thinking about it as you're reading the next section, And you go back and say, "Ooh, that wasn't complete." Well, just improve the paragraph, but don't write a second paragraph. In other words, you're trying to hold the ideas in your head. Everybody can do this. Now, what we're going to do is discuss at our tables again. In one way, we're trying to get a hold of Romans, but it doesn't do any good to talk about that because you're going to do your work this week about the intent. So focus on what does it mean to be fully established? What are the specific tests to measure if a person is fully established in the gospel? How does your worldview fundamentally change if you grasp the gospel as presented in Romans? And in what way is the gospel fundamental to unity of the churches, to being of one mind? In fact, you can kind of start, many of you have done work, like we were talking about with Todd earlier, so you can handle either one of these sets. But others of you, you're going to be in a position, you're not going to have too much to say about either one of these until you've done your paragraphs, and you can move through Romans yourself. Okay, Todd, same question I usually ask Michael to start our discussion. Part of what you were talking about in our interview our discussion at the beginning is your own work. This is your second time through this level of mastering the scriptures. You've done a lot of your own work in your Old New Testament studies. And really, everybody does preliminary work in the first principles as you master it, because it sets you up, remember, for series 3, where you do more work on how to interpret, you do Acts, and then you do a run at some key books in the early, middle, later letters of Paul. This is the third cycle through. So series 1 and 2 cycles through a lot of the ideas. Series 3 sets up this framework. Now this takes you through the early, middle, later letters. But in light of your work, what stands out fresh to you from this presentation? You got the same habit as Michael, sitting there typing like crazy during the whole time. I've looked at Michael's notes because sometimes you can multitask. You know, if you got the kind of mind like Michael's, do 2-3 things at one time. Every now and then I check out the computer, make sure he's really not listening and not multitasking. So I assume.
I assume. I'm listening.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, so what stands out fresh?
Thinking through what Paul was rethinking, the crux of that Romans 12 1 and 2, having the huge presentation, full presentation of the gospel and God's plan in 1 through 11, getting to that transition point in Romans 12, he wasn't just encouraging us to do that. He's already shared his process his conclusions coming off of that process himself that you were talking about in Galatians 1, where he had spent 3 years going through this. Tying those two books together in that way was an interesting thought. But especially given the fact that the importance of Romans 12 and the whole argument of the book, you have that gospel. Then what do I do because of that? And this is what the Galatians 1 is what Paul has done. Demonstrating what Paul has done already. Thinking through. Renewing his mind, he had to make a huge shift. I mean, the experiences he had were not at all like what he was going to be moving forward with. So his whole first period of his life, he has the experience on the road to Damascus, and then spends this 3 years in Arabia, relearning everything that he thought he had already known. And that's another important thing that I think that you brought up in here. It wasn't just 3 years of taking this all in and all of it just immediately stuck and was understood perfectly. I think you're absolutely right. He struggled with it, pieces of this, for days, months, maybe even most of the time in those 3 years, trying to understand all of the implications and.
And what's the value? I've got thoughts on that too. But what's the value of seeing even Paul struggle through that for a three-year period?
Because that's the same struggle that we all have. I mean, we get into our lives and then we think about renewing our minds and having that be a huge challenge. As you said, well, it goes from gospel that has really starts a didache conversation, or launches into a didache conversation as you start moving Romans 12 and beyond, and it's the same struggles that we would have in renewing our minds. There's inertia forces that play on us and would have played on him pretty hard, where it's hard to move from where you were to this new position, and especially if you've got so much invested like he did in the wrong thing, the wrong understanding of what God's plan was. That's a huge transition to make. And we have those same, whether it's a different denominational background or just something we're not quite exhibiting correctly in our lives, those are struggles, and we've called them strongholds in the counseling course, but those are huge hurdles to overcome. Mm-hmm. And he's demonstrated that is overcomeable, though. It may take time, though.
That struck me, too. And this is part of the process. Like I said earlier, when I was just writing and everything was ready to move in the Gospels after a decade or so of work, I felt, wow, that's right. This is ready for prime time. I got the same feeling here. But even if you get to the point where at one level, this series is called Mastering the Scriptures. And some people have kind of been critical of that, because what are you going to do, walk around saying you've mastered the Scriptures and other people haven't, when nobody can completely master, anything? But there is such a thing as a mastery. That's what Paul was talking to Timothy about. You are now a master craftsman. That doesn't mean you're going to stop learning. Even as I put Romans together this time, I saw several things that I hadn't seen before. But after I finish the slides, before I go to sleep on a Saturday night, I always go back through them twice, just to make sure I've got the flow. And I noticed this time through, there were four or five things just practicing the slides after going through the work that I'd never thought of before. I never really thought, and you might think it's small, but I never really thought about Paul then going for 2 weeks. I never noticed. He spent 2 weeks with Peter. Well, that's significant when you look at the debate that followed, the process before, and taking into consideration what it means to move people in the context of a paradigm. So you're always going to be perfecting your author's intention statement, your paragraphs under it. You're going to grow in your theology. That's never going to stop. But there is such a thing as mastering it and getting to a mastery level. And that's what we're after. That's why we're pushing. You got to do it yourself, in this process. What else stood out?
Even the comments on, it being Paul's gospel, and that I think similarly can trip people up in saying, well, how can Paul be confident that's his gospel, not Peter's or John's or someone else's? Why does there even need to be that distinction? Would be a good question on the other side of that. And I think this answered well. Maybe we need to think. Some of us will have to think of that more. What that really means. But I mean, ultimately, he was taking ownership of it. He had been transformed. Mm-hmm. There was definitely some of that passive transformation we were talking about in Romans 12, but he had also gone through a lot of effort to take ownership of that gospel.
One of the other ideas that hit me when I was just doing that quick reading afterwards, again, it's where you started in terms of this process for even being Paul, but imagine getting on the other side of that Arabia experience, and Christ personally has revealed this whole picture, and you're the only one that really has that full picture. And now you're entering into 10 years of conflict. Can you imagine what Paul went through. You can't imagine it, because look what he said in Corinthians. 2 Corinthians, about all that he went through. But you're the only one that has that idea clear, and you've got to fight it in the churches. You've got to fight it amongst the opposition of the Romans, even the Jewish churches. It unfolds through all those conflicts in those early letters, and you're the only one, plus all kinds of bad things are said about you. You can't speak very well. You can't see very well. You know, all of these kind of things. It's just, I mean, that had to be, I mean, every now and then, I think Paul, Jesus took him up to the third heaven to let him see, again, this is worth it because, you know, here's the future. But, you know, Paul describes it as kind of like a constant process of like going through hell, you know, in a way, when he was depressed to the point of death. But having that and having to carry it and having to get it clear shows us that same process in real life as we try to establish churches.
Yeah, and he's trying to overcome a system that's hundreds of years old. You know, we're battling systems that are also approaching hundreds of years old, but still not as old as what he was combating. And these 10-year time frames are just a sprint in that. And you can see why that would be so wearing on him, you know, in trying to combat what had been the understanding of this unfolding story of God up to that point, that was so misunderstood, and he's trying to correct what that is. That's going to lead to conflict. It's going to lead to issues. And as you said, he was the person that was most fully revealed to. That will hit people the wrong way. And having that even 2-week conversation with Peter, likely not a small thing, but I think that just speaks to the importance of taking ownership of the ideas ourselves. Paul is taking ownership of the gospel because it's been revealed to him. We have things that are certainly our sphere in our own lives that we have to own, and we have to have a good theology around it to really fully own it. And kind of gets to the challenge of Paul could have chose to be like the other apostles, doing the same things, but he had a different sphere. And we all have different spheres in our work and ministry and in our lives, and we have to own the theology of those of that life and that sphere that we're in, and not feel compelled that the answers that anyone sitting beside you right now have come to are always the right answer for you. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean it's the wrong answer, but
or the right way to say it for you.
Yeah.
To be able to communicate clearly. We got to switch to people's discussion here, but anything else short that stood out this time?
I think those are the two main things.
Let me ask a quick question. When's the first time you went through the first principles? How many years ago?
21 years ago.
Jeez.
Yeah. I know, that's what I think every time I answer that question.
I wasn't asking you to make me feel old.
Yeah.
21 years ago, when's the first time you took a build course?
It would have been within the year after that.
Okay,
20 years ago.
So my question to all of you is, why is Todd able to sit up here and carry on this level of conversation when most churches don't even have the gospel clear, let alone anybody that could handle this level of conversation? Why is he able to do it? He's building this body of work, over a period of time.